You guys ready to keep going in Exodus here? So I'm pretty excited about it. We got the big story today. You know, the one that Charlton Heston did such a good job on. How many of you have seen that Moses? You know, there's a side of it. I almost want to watch it again because it's, I don't, you know, I couldn't tell you what movie I watched last week, you know. My wife does this. Doesn't really matter. I'm usually reading something or doing something anyway while I'm watching a movie. But for some reason, that movie, I mean, I can remember vividly, you know, him confronting Pharaoh and, you know, walking through the Red Sea when there's fish swimming up here and stuff. It was pretty wild. And, you know, that dangerously, I would say that probably left a stronger impression on me than what happened and how it happened than the biblical account, you know. Although it was, you know, they did a pretty good job. Back in those days, they researched the Bible and tried not to go too far against it, or they'd been thrown out of the theater, you know, at the time. Not the way it is now, but people would not have, because most people were pretty biblically literate at the time. And so, but here we are, the big parting of the Red Sea story. Just a quick review of chapter 13, because it was 2 weeks ago, and most of us don't remember that far back. But okay, I'll take it. So there was a couple. You know, this is God again transforming, going from revealing who He is to beginning to shape His people and what His people are to look like. And this is really important for me. I mean, I couldn't help it in reading through this story time and time again in 14, just chapter 14 of the Red Sea. I couldn't help but think of how pertinent it is to our lives and God calling us out of the world. I mean, there's so many direct parallels, and God purposely did that. Purposely led the people, purposely directed, purposely orchestrated it so that it would have an impact on us, not just as a historical movie, but as a real life event in the way God cares about His people and what God cares about. There's a couple things, just briefly, that God calls us that are different. You know, what does it mean to be the people of God? One of the things is a people of consecration, right? A people that are sanctified, set apart. That's what He told them. You're to be My people. Taking sanctification is that, because this is really important to us. What does God call us to? This is taking what is ordinary and setting it aside exclusively for God. Okay? This is not, that's a really important thing. When God calls us out of the world, when God calls us as His people, He doesn't just say, oh, you're forgiven, it's fine, so go ahead and do that. Everything's taken care of, don't worry about it. Here's a credit card in case you do sin. That's the way most of us have kind of been raised to believe, you know, that you got a credit card to cover any that was there, and you try not to use it. You know, we don't want to run up that credit card too hard, but, you know. But that's not the way. He calls us to be a consecrated people, a people set apart for Him. He calls us to be a people of remembrance. Remember we talked about that 2 weeks ago, and I believe we truly are to be a people of remembrance. You know, I mean, I was thinking about communion the last couple of weeks, and what does that look like? And the reason that we haven't spent time over the years doing communion a lot is because I would contend that it's a very difficult thing to get past preconditioned beliefs in communion. Okay? All of us were... If we were grown up in a church, and correct me if I'm wrong, there might be some, but everybody that I know of here, you might be the one exception, so I don't know. But the rest of everybody that I know of here, raised with communion, it had to do with, you know, a solemn time where you make sure you confess your sins to God and you get right with God, because you certainly don't want to do this, otherwise you might get sick, you know, doing it, and you know, you're sitting in church, and all the elders or the ushers, and they're walking along and passing the communion thing, and they're taking this, or somebody is taking it. What's wrong if you didn't take that, you know, doing it? I mean, it's an utter mess. the way we continue to do communion is, I would contend, Catholic, still, in Catholic light. And just because we don't come up, I mean, obviously the Catholics completely lost their minds. I mean, they had 300 years, they fought and killed each other. Literally fought and killed each other over the fact of, does that piece of bread truly become the body of Jesus Christ? Does that wine truly become the blood of Jesus? That's why you stinking ordinary peons, well, I can't trust you to handle it. You might drop it or something, right? And then what would we do? You know? And that's why it was done that way, doing it. So Martin Luther came along and changed things, but still didn't move very far from it. So, you know, but again, we are to be a people of remembrance. We talked about the holding certain holidays that we do have in this country. We've been privileged. Because if you were born in any other country in the world, it would look different. We are blessed that this country is founded by people who cite holidays like the birth of Christ, like the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, like a day of is a country where we set aside to thank God for His provision. And I would contend that we need to fight for those days because we are to be a people of remembrance. It very easily, God is pretty clear in the Bible, the Old Testament particularly says, no, it's not just about having correct theology and understanding and having your history right. It's about doing things for not only ourselves, but our children that, you know, remind them, that cause them to remember. Participating with body, mind, with the entirety of your being. In the remembrance. Not just, well, I understand that, so let's do an Easter egg hunt, you know? I mean, it is about those days is the most sacred days for the world, not just for the country. And I think we need to be people that do that. That God said you are to be people that remember. Otherwise, you'll get caught up and forget, you know? And it is important that you guys, with your families, that you order your families and order your family's holidays, or order your family's celebrations to truly honor God. Family traditions are important, but I would suggest we review and check all of our family traditions, right? Because some of them are really not necessarily based in what is real and not necessarily good things to hand down. You know, I grew up, I had mistletoe in the house when we were kids. You know? Because, oh, isn't this part of Christmas? Mistletoe came from the Druids, man. It's wicked. I mean, it's a bad deal. And why we would have mistletoe, I mean, it has nothing to do with the birth of Jesus Christ doing it. It's a wicked thing where it came from. The origins of a lot of our holidays, the enemy is very, very purposeful in bringing them in and diminishing them. So I think it's important for us all to look at that and to look at it as a body. One of the things that's really important, as a body, and God, you know, this called, when He called people out of Israel, called the nation Israel to represent Him, right? And what does that look like today? That's the church. He says He's called the church to represent Jesus Christ in this world. One of the beauties of being intimately involved in each other's lives as a body is that your kids don't have to be the only weird ones. Okay? Because in this world, your kids will be weird. Okay? Because things that go completely contrary to God, that everybody else does it, but it's not necessarily, not necessarily, there are things about it that are giving our kids a wrong message, that are teaching our kids a wrong thing. And it's very impactful. You know, it's very impactful. So we are to be a people of remembrance. And the third thing that we talked about 2 weeks ago is that we are to people that are compelled by God's mercy. What does that mean? That should be what motivates and moves us. And compels us is God's mercy. And it's very easy to lose sight of that, right? It's very easy to lose sight of that we are completely at the mercy of God's grace. We are completely without God's grace and God calling us to be damned without hope. We are to be people that are compelled by it. One of the difficulties in doing that is that we don't interpret God's mercy as His mercy oftentimes. We interpret His mercy oftentimes as neglect or not paying attention or things not going the way we want. Remember this, that God's mercy is usually the long way. Okay? God's mercy is usually the long way around. Now, all of us want McDonald's relationship with God. Want instant, right? All of us want to have it now. I pray I want to have it now. But God is not neglectful. He's not got too much on His plate and He's too busy and not paying attention. The wondrous thing about God's character and His omniscience and His omnipresence is that God can be absolutely, completely present in knowing with each one of us individually. That's a phenomenal thing. And that's His desire to be that way. It's never a neglect thing. But we often interpret the long way around is, hey God, like, don't you see? Where are you? How come things are going like this? Rather than going, okay God, what's this journey look like? So, and this is important as we move into today in chapter 14. Remember I said that there was a couple of verses in chapter 13 that have been meaningful ever since starting this, prior to starting it even, Exodus. It was one of the more compelling things that kind of drove me this direction or led me this direction. In verse 17, I'll just read it to you. In chapter 13 it says, now it came about when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, even though it was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war, and they return to Egypt. Hence God led the people around by the way of the wilderness to the Red Sea, and the sons of Israel went up in martial array from the land of Egypt. I would contend that's something that we should commit to our hearts as we go through life. God's purpose is always to lead us into a true, deep, consecrated relationship with Him. He's willing to do that, anything worth having all the things in our minds that we know about quality and depth and intimacy, they all take time, right? We all know that, And yet, when it comes to our relationship with God, we want it instant. There's a tremendous propensity in us to go, God, I want you to change my heart so that I'll just want to not sin. And God says, you need to fear me and make a choice not to sin. God always wants to create a deep relationship, not a shallow relationship. God is always trying to build, and that takes time, and it's often the hard way around. The thing to remember from the start of this, the themes of Exodus is God's got a plan, right? God's got a plan, and He's in the process of executing it. Are we going along, or are we fighting Him? Are we bucking? Are we trying to buck against what God is trying to do? Are we, do we wish it would go faster? Do we wish it would, Mallory? Do we wish it would not take so long? Do we wish it would go easier? God is always willing to take the tough way. I think the girls are gonna have to reach. I don't know. I want cat out of the bag. Don't say anything. Be quiet. I can't. Nice. Okay. Nice. Okay. Be quiet. Okay. The take away my object lesson. Okay. It's very critical in our life that we, instead of going, why God, why are you doing this? That instead, we are obedient. And it's the same thing here in this story. always the same thing with God's people. God has a plan. God has a purpose. His purpose is to redeem His people. His purpose is to lead His people into an intimate relationship with Him. We always need to remember that. And the process is not for us to complain. That will never lead to health. To resist. To say why. The issue is to be obedient. That's always God's purpose. Is be obedient in the time. God, what do you want me to do? I don't know what this looks like. I don't even like it. In fact, it looks like I'm going the wrong direction. Right? And it's really dark. And I don't want to be here. But, God, what do you want me to do? To be obedient is the only way that we're going to head in the right direction. Out of that, not to complain, not to be angry at God, not to whine at God that I don't understand. So, and he makes that pretty clear here. When we live our lives that way, we'll begin to realize that we are a people compelled by God's mercy. That we are a people that are, God is always merciful. This story here is very politically incorrect, okay? I don't even know how you can preach this on a Sunday morning in this country, in most churches. Very politically incorrect, okay? And in this country these days, what is the highest virtue? PC, right? Political correctness, that is what is right and what is wrong. I mean, it's a sick deal to watch our whole judicial system be moved and motivated, transformed by political correctness rather than what is right and wrong. I mean, it's a bad deal because that's completely subjective. And right now, this would be very, very wrong. But this is God, okay? And this is the story that God gave us. And so it's really important. Is God wrong? I know everybody would say, no, God isn't wrong. But he's very politically incorrect here, okay? He acts in a way that, I mean, he drowned. Savagely drowned. I don't know. 1,000+ people and 1,000+ horses. Peter would not do well with that, right? Drowned them. I mean, they're floating up on shore. This is a God of mercy. The thing that we always understand that we cannot understand God based on our political correct understanding of it. That God is nice, right? God is loving. And it's still a matter of being compelled by God's mercy. God saved his people. He not because they were worth it, because God called them, God saved them. They took baby steps, whined and complained and pooped their pants and, you know, but God saved them in that process. And God also judged those who spoke against them and against his way. And there was a, you know, the movie doesn't get, there was no animals hurt in this movie thing, signature at the bottom of it, okay? Because there was, okay? And you know, I'm not saying let's go kill 1,000 horses, because this is a cool thing, you know? But this is God who is the judge. We are not to, one of the things that is so important, and I ask you, the reason I make that and try to make it graphic, I think because God left it graphic, okay? So think about it. Okay? God put it in here for us. And it's not, like I said a couple weeks ago, I think it's really important in these stories to try to do our best to immerse ourselves in the story. Okay? I think that's important. I think it's important to visualize standing at the edge of this giant body of water that's going to drown you and all your animals, because they had lots of animals, right, with them, and all of them, and standing at the edge of this thing and seeing this army of, I don't know how many chariots, 100 plus, potentially way more than that, chariots with horses driving, and a very angry, dominating people who have held you in slavery for 400 years. And they hold that sway over you. They hold that oppression over you. And all of a sudden, here they're coming. Put yourself in that position. I think that it's critical to see, it's easy to look at them and say, why did you respond like that? And I would say, why do we respond like we do in the face of adversity? Why do we respond when everything seems to be going wrong, when nothing seems to be going the way I thought it would go, when my life is this relentless struggle and it's against it? How do we act? And how does God call us to act? Because that's the story. Chapter 14, verse 1 says, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, tell the sons of Israel to turn back and camp before... I was actually enunciating these last night because you know, you read it and you read it and you read it to yourself, and all of a sudden it's Sunday morning and you start to read out loud and you go, what is that? Because you can do it in your head, you know, real easy, you know. Don't even, but not in front of everyone. So, Pihahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, you shall camp in front of Baal Zephon, opposite it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say to the sons of Israel, they are wandering aimlessly in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. I think it's important to know, were they wandering aimlessly in the land? What did it say just before that? It says, the Lord was going out before them in chapter 13 with a pillar of cloud by day to lead them on the way, and a pillar of fire by night to give them light, that they may travel by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day, nor the pillar by night from his people. He was leading them, right? He was leading them, and they were following him. They weren't going, oh, there's the pillar, there's the thing, I'm going this way. They seemed to be following. But he led them on this goose chase, right? I'm sure that the, you know, you guys didn't grow up with these movies, but I did. You know, like the Lawrence of Arabia kind of movies things, you know, doing it. You know, where there's the guy peeking over the screen, you know, looking at the other guys or something. I'm sure that Egypt had its spies. There was all kinds of tribes out, you know, nomads running around their tents that were reporting to Pharaoh that were subject to him in the area. They weren't that far from Egypt yet, okay? And I'm sure they knew, looking at it, it looked like they're wandering aimlessly. They don't know where to go. Remember, they originally Pharaoh said go, but now he interprets it, and everybody came to him and said, they ran away! They fled! Well, no, wait, they were supposed to just go out and worship their God, right? They were just going to go out and do some sacrifices and then come back. But they fled. They took everything with them, right? Everything they needed for sustenance, all the animals, all the clothes they needed. Now, obviously, it was a quick turnaround. I was trying to think about that. Did they all come up with tents, or was it just nice mild nights or something? You know? Because they weren't necessarily Bedouins living in tents then, right? I mean, they lived in houses, I assume. You know, it seemed like. You know, put them over the doorposts. Maybe they were tents with a nice door frame in it or something. I don't know. Nice tent. You know, nice wall tent. But nevertheless, they left, and they went, oh, man, they're desert. But God led them wandering around. It says he took them, you know, rather than going this way, they went this way. And I'm sure the story was out there, right? That they were the people from the land of the Philistines. Right? I mean, it's interesting. It's still called Palestine, you know, after the Philistines doing it. So, but it was a land of... That was their land. I'm sure the story was out, right? That this is the land that God called them to, the land that gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the land that God promised to them. But they're not heading that way. They're kind of this way. So all of a sudden they're wandering aimlessly is what he thought. God was doing this on purpose. Why? Because he said, thus I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will chase after them, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. And they did so. Keep in mind that word honored is used a few times here in this chapter in the context of they will be honored by me closing the Red Sea and drowning all the army of Egypt and all their horses. God says, I will be honored. Okay? I think it's important to know that word honored, because it's the same word that's used for honor your father and mother. What does that mean? The actual Hebrew word is kabod. And the word means to be made heavy, weighty, or burdensome. Okay? So, the command of Moses was to honor kabod, your father and mother. In this thing, he says, they're to honor me. How does that equate? To be made heavy, weighty, or burdensome. In the New Testament, it's interesting because Jesus quoted the Ten Commandments, honor your father and mother, several times, right? But he didn't speak the Hebrew word, he spoke the Greek word. Right? So, what was the Greek word? The Greek word is time. T-I-M-E. I'm sure that's not a very Greek enunciation, but that's what it spells to me. Okay? Time. So, but it means to put value to put a price on. Okay? It means to put value to, and this is important for all of us as we relate to parents and think about parents and what do we do? And how do we respond and what's a healthy response to it? But it's also important that God says, I will be honored by this. And again, what does it mean to honor God? Because I think that's, hi Lisa. You don't like what we're talking about? See ya. I think it's critical for us to understand what he's saying. We tend to think of honor as, you know, being nice to, speak nice, don't say bad words in front of, you know, or something. I mean, how do you honor your grandparents or whatever? But it means to give weight, to be burdened by. Okay? To be made heavy or weighty. The nation, and he talks about this in reference to Egypt, that they will know that I am not just another God. That this will be a big deal in their lives. That they will be burdened with this, right? We think of burdened as a bad thing, always a bad thing, but that's not true. Right? The Bible tells us to share one another's burdens. Right? The Bible says to bear one another's burdens with each other. That's not a bad thing. Not an easy thing. Okay? Not something you necessarily want to do. But we are to be burdened with who God is. We're to be, it's to be a weighty thing, a heavy thing to us. And the same to the Egyptian people. And, you know, the God is this God of absolute mercy and great mercy. He is also the just God. And we can never forget that. I challenge all of us to get rid of our politically correct views of God. And orient our view of God like this. We should fear God. We should fear God. And if we don't have a right relationship with Him. You know? God is a loving God. That means He's always, the fallacy of that thinking, when we interpret that by our standards, is that means He would never do anything that would make me feel bad, right? That means He would be nice. That means He would be like that, you know, I don't know what example there would be here because it's not that nice old grandpa that just spoils his kids, right? I mean, isn't that like God? You know, that He would just always make you feel good and make you feel good about yourself and be happy. So when I don't feel good and things aren't right and things aren't nice, the way things are going, I really struggle with that. Right? When we have a politically correct view of God. A politically correct view of God is to diminish the fact God is a just God and God will judge sin. And God hates sin. Right in front of Him. He says, this Egypt, the rest of people there, women, children, I don't know how many men, because it was already an utter wreck. An utter wreck, Egypt was, from the plagues that God had inflicted them with. And now here's this final deal where God's going to come down with His judgment. and he's going to wipe out all the rest. He said took all their horses, all the rest of their horses, and the people. Drowned him. And, you know, and understand, be very, very careful to ever think, yeah, but he's gotten older and softer since the New Testament, right? I mean, he's, you know, that was the God of the Old Testament. He was kind of young and full of it, and, you know. Really? Same God. He hasn't gotten old, and he hasn't changed. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. God is the same, same God. Right? I just challenge any of you to read and reread and reread and rethink the story of Ananias and Sapphira when God was establishing the church. Right? And he says, this is what I want my church to look like. This is what I want people to look like. I want you to be a consecrated people. Right? I want you to be people set apart for me. A people holy in your interactions. I mean, what a story. Here's everybody in the whole body that was gathered. There's this church. Everybody was selling everything they had. Put it in a pot so there was no one with need. They were being persecuted. It was not a pretty time. The Jews did not like them. They got the Romans to come against them. So it was a nasty time. There's a lot of people hurting. But they were selling the properties, selling the houses. Here's the money, man. Just divide it up. Whoever has need. All right, let's do this. And there's a fire property, and they go, I don't know, I forget, you know, what are the numbers? But they sold it, and they left, they gave half of it. Now, that's a pretty big deal, okay? Even a 10% tithe that we struggle with, right? It's like a 50% thing. They 50% of it in there, well, pretty charitable, right? It's a good thing. 50% of it. And they let it be assumed that they were like everybody else and they sold this piece of property for this amount of money and put it in the pot. And here we are. They let it be assumed. They didn't even say it with their mouth. Just the intention of the heart was they let people consider or think about them in a way that wasn't true. What did God do? I'm sure you've all heard of the story, right? So Ananias walks in, you know, hey, brother, you know, hey, thanks, you know, you sold a piece of property for a big sum of money and, you know, put it in the pot. That's great of you. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Dead. Dead. We're dead. They drug him out by his feet. Not very long later, his wife walks in. Hey, you sell this piece of property for X amount of money? Yeah. Dead. This is a New Testament God. Maybe he had a lapse in getting old, was a grumpy old man at the time or something. No, this is God who cares. Who cares about the sincerity, the purity, the sanctity. The same way he did then, the same way he does now. And this is a God that is a God of judgment. And for us to think, we, you know, it goes back to the thing that always comes back at me of, you know, something a long time ago, and I think it's always worth considering, is what's a better word? How BA, I want to say, okay, you know, how big, how tough, is your God. Okay? Because we all have an image of God. Amongst the men we've talked about it, you serve a little Jesus. Well, how disrespectful. Really? How do you act? You know? Most of us have an image of Jesus, and, you know, I don't think the pictures on the wall helped when I was growing up. Because I could take that guy, I think, you know, doing it if I needed to. He's not on the wall here, Steve. So, but the most of us serve a God that if we want to say no to, no big deal. God, get over yourself. Right? Because God says, Bill, this is what I want you to do. This is how I want you to act. This is what I command you. This is what I want your life to look like. We go, yeah, but sorry. That's a little Jesus, in my opinion. That's one we can take if we need to. You know? I mean, he's still a genie, but we can put it back in the bottle or something, you know? God, I need your help. I want you to do this, but and I think you're powerful enough to do it, maybe, sort of. No wonder we don't have much faith. We serve a very small God if we serve a God that we do not fear. If we serve a God that we can take when we need to. We can tell to shut up when we need to. We can tell to go away when I want to do what I want to do. If that's the God, serve a false God. You do not serve the God of this Bible. Because we should be fearful and trembling to say no, to spit in his face. You know, if we serve, again, with the guys, we understand it a little bit, you know, doing it. That, you know, if Jesus says, well, this is why I say, I call you to sexual purity. I call you to holiness in your sexual life. Well, I know you do, but I want to do what I want to do. I want to act the way I want to act. That's, you might as well, as a guy, say the next thing, you want to fight about it? Right? Because I ain't scared. You want to fight about it? I mean, we have all kinds of religious ways not to act like that, right? But it's what our life does. It's how our life acts. That was their impression. That was the Egyptian impression of this God. Who is this God? Right? Who is this Jehovah God? That I should obey him. Right? He's just another one of the gods. And there's lots of them. Right? And there's lots of them that they believe in a lot of different gods. And those images, those frog-faced, whatever they were images that they had, were empowered by the demonic. Make no, you know, it is a graven image. It is a wooden image that has no life in it. It is empowered by the spiritual. If that is something we give allegiance to, the enemy will hold us to that. So they didn't see it big, and neither did the people of Israel. Neither did the people, neither did the Hebrews, okay? They did not see God as God. And this is a problem. So, God says, I will teach you to honor me through what I'm going to do to these Egyptians. And, you know, most of us would say, well, the God I serve wouldn't act like that. You know, he wouldn't drown 1,000 horses. I mean, what kind of wickedness is that? What did they do to you? Right? This is that God. So, when the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his servants had a change of heart towards the people, and they said, what is this that we have done? That we have let Israel go from serving us. So he made his chariot ready, and he took his people with him. And he took 600 select chariots, and all the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he chased after the sons of Israel as the sons of Israel were going out boldly. Then the Egyptians chased after them with all their horses, the horses and chariots of Pharaoh. His horsemen and his army, and they overtook them camping by the sea, besides Phi Hahithroth, in front of Baal Sephron. So, I don't ever read over too quickly the fact that at this point God hardened Pharaoh's heart. That should terrify us. At that point, Pharaoh was condemned to hell. God did that. Oh, God would never do that. Really? Did you just read that? Because I didn't make it up and write that. There's different times. It says Pharaoh hardened his own heart at times, right? But Pharaoh had hardened his heart and hardened his heart and hardened his heart and refused. Did God give him a chance? Every time, you know? Moses came to him and said, hey, let my people go. Come on. Be obedient to me. And Pharaoh said, nope, not going to do it. Pharaoh hardened his own heart. Be obedient to what I'm telling you. Be obedient to what I'm calling you to. Nope, not going to do it. And God finally said, enough. Enough's enough. And he hardened his heart. There's no more desperate state to be in. Have God harden your heart. You might as well be that pillar of salt, right? I mean, and God, at this point, God hardened his heart, and they chased after them. And as Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they became very frightened. So the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. Now that sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah, they did the right thing. They cried out to God. Well, if we read their story, that's not really as good. I think you know what the cries probably sounded like? Why, God? What are you doing? Why did you take us out of here? Why did you take us out of Egypt? Look at what's going to happen. You let us out here. You let us by your stinking pillar. You let us right up, backed up against this ocean that we're either going to drown in or we're going to get killed by these people. You say, well, how do you know he said that? Well, because I read it. Then they said to Moses, Is it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. I would say that all of us in some ways have responded to God in that way. Right? I guarantee you, okay? You just need to put it in perspective. I don't understand why you're doing this, God. I don't understand why this is this way. Because he's going to give us a good response. See, I don't know how many times I have heard this. In the process of trying to help somebody walk through life, they go, why don't you, whether they say it directly or not, why don't you just leave me alone? Okay? And God's okay with my sin. God's okay with where I'm at. Obviously, I'm not struck dead here. Why don't you just leave me alone? Okay? No. That's what they said with hardened hearts. But God is compassionate and gracious, and he called these people. God is not merciful. At that point, it would have been pretty easy for God to go, fine. Fine. If that's how you feel, if that's the kind of people you're going to be on it, let's just get this done right now, and we'll find another race of people to do this with, because you guys are stiff-necked and hard-hearted, complaining, selfish, whiners. But Moses said to the people, do not fear. This is another one of those profound nuggets and how we are to respond when the whole world seems like it's caving in on us, when things are allowed to be going completely at a wreck. We're terrified. We're fearful. We don't know what to do and how to act. He says, stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he has accomplished for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will never see them again forever. This is a key verse. Let the Lord fight for you while you keep silent. Like, shut up. Quit whining. And do what? The Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. What is our way out of despair? What is our way out of when the whole world seems to be at a wreck and at a loss? When we are at our wit's end in life? Is it to whine and cry out to God? God, why are you doing this? Right? Or is it to be still while the Lord fights for you, but go forward? Right? What does go forward mean to us? Be obedient. Be obedient to what God says. God, I don't know, this doesn't seem right, I don't want to, it doesn't feel right, but you tell me to go forward. Okay? to not stand, be stalled out. The enemy, what was the enemy trying to do? Understand this. The enemy was trapping them, right? The enemy had them surrounded from their perspective of life, right? The enemy had them, they were done. Go forward. Do you think they didn't say that? I mean, they're going, yeah, right, Moses. Go forward. Which way is that? That way and drown, or this way and get cut up by these boys with their swords, and whipped to death, and beaten, and run over by the chariots. Ah, sounds like a good option, right? That's what God said, go forward, because he says there is a way out. But you have to be willing to take the steps to be obedient to me. And that was always his case. You have to step out in faith. Okay? Because this was a big bunch of faith. As for you, lift up your staff. It's Moses who says this. And stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the sons of Israel will go hand over this and shall go through the midst of the sea on dry land. Well, of course we would follow then. I mean, God parted the sea. What's the dry land? We're good, right? Again, remember, you know, we say we would follow God if we had a pillar of fire, right? If we had a cloud, right? Of course we would. Don't we all wish that? God, what do I do now? Whoa, just follow this pillar of fire. Okay, good, I'm in, right? We have the Spirit of God. We have the Spirit of God and we don't listen and follow. So let's not kid ourselves to think, oh, I wouldn't be like those guys. Of course I would. And if you open the sea up, pretty obvious, right? Again, put yourself in that seashore. Who wouldn't say, are you kidding me? I mean, are you kidding me? You know, it said, you know, I don't know how it looked. In the movie Moses, I was thinking kind of the visual way I was thinking trying to do, but think, there's this giant. He said the wind blew. There was this giant wind that blew. This east wind that blew doing it. And then the wall, I said little walls on both sides of them, on their right and their left of water that was built up. So we talk about it being, oh, it was just a reed sea and it was only about this deep and the wind blew it off and doing it. Well, that's cute. Then how'd he kill all the Egyptians and their horses? They drowned in the cattails? You know, I don't know what, you know? So, you know, it obviously was a huge amount of water that was on their right and on their left. Not too common. But, you know, we've seen something like that in like terrariums or like SeaWorld or something like that, you know, or kind of like that, you know, but there's glass there. There's no glass here. I don't know if you see fishes swimming around it or not. Okay. But here's these giant walls of water. And he says, yeah, walk through that, boys. Ooh. What? He said the land was dry. He dried out the ground underneath them. At least while they walked through it on dry land. It went a little bit south soon, okay? So, and as for me, behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. Okay? So, it was going to take a little bit of, really? We're going to chase them down? Well, I guess if they went through, I mean, they didn't think about their God opened this thing up for them. What's he think of us? You know, they didn't think of that. He hardened their hearts and did it. And they said, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will be honored through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I am honored through Pharaoh, through his chariots and his horsemen. The angel of God, who had been going before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them. That's a pretty cool deal. What does it say the angel of God was? When you look back over verse 21 of chapter 13, it says, and the Lord was going before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar by night. So what God did is he took this pillar of cloud, and it's nighttime. I don't know why, you know, it was turning night. And he took this pillar of cloud, turned it into a, I would consider it to be a fog bank of some sort. And instead of leading them with this pillar of cloud, it says he went behind them and went between the Egyptians and them. So this cloud came, so darkness fell and this fog was there. Otherwise, I mean, you got to think about it. There's a million plus people and all their animals and stuff that got to let go. And they're within sight of each other, right? Before the cloud comes. And if, I'm sure if the Egyptians saw them packing up stuff to leave, you know, they would have pounced, right? But instead, they became very confused because it went dark, and then this I would contend, we'd call it fog, a heavy pillar of cloud came so big that they were completely disoriented and didn't know where they were and thought, well, where can they go? We're here, ocean's there, you know, water's there. They can't go anywhere. They're trying to just wait till morning and get them, right? And it says that, and that's interesting because it says the angel, oftentimes, the Lord, Jehovah God, is called, and I believe that's Jesus, is called the angel of God in going with him. So, I think it's quite probable, and quite possible, because he called the Lord was with him in the cloud, that this is the Lord that, they said, what is your name? This is my new name. I am who I am. Was with them and leading them. So, he went behind them, got in between them, between the terms. So came between the camp of Egypt and the camp of Israel, and there was a cloud along with the darkness, yet it gave light at night. Thus the one did not come near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord swept back by a strong wind all night and turned the sea into dry land, so the waters were divided. And the sons of Israel went through the midst of the sea on dry land. And the waters were like a wall to them on their right and on their left. Then the Egyptians took up the pursuit. Somehow they snuck somebody through, you know, that little guy peeped over the sand dune again and pulled down his little mask or something. And saw, oh, these guys are all leaving. What's happened? They're gone. Where'd they go? Look at, there's an opening through here. So the sons of Israel went through in the midst of the sea on dry land, and the waters were like a wall to them on the right and on their left. And the Egyptians took up the pursuit, and all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen went in after them into the midst of the sea. And it came about at the morning watch, which is somewhere between 2 and 6 or so in the morning, still dark, okay? It came about at the morning watch that the Lord looked down on the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and brought the army of the Egyptians into confusion. And he caused their chariot wheels to swerve, and he made them drive with difficulty. So the Egyptians said, this isn't going well, right? This is, I mean, you had to be a little bit tenuous anyway, you know, going through, and there's these, hey, again, God asks us to walk through. He did, you know, in Psalms 23, he says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because my shepherd's with me. He doesn't say you won't walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He doesn't say that. Again, the journey that God takes us on is the enduring long-term journey that usually is the long way around. Because he wants eradication of sin from our lives. He wants holiness. He doesn't say, here's a cheap fix, take this pill, let me sprinkle some dust on you. You know, we all want that. We want this instant thing, make this happen. He says, no, I'm going to take you through so this is real. So this is enduring. He says, and throughout life, he is going to allow us, because he loves us, to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And that's different for all of us, right? It's different for all of us and looks different for all of us. Some of us said it would have a lot to do with our spouse. So that is this journey that it just seems, God, why? You know, so, some of it's leukemia, some of it's children, some of it's who knows what all, you know? Family, upbringing, abuse. And it's all there. And God allows us to walk through the valley of the shadow of death because he wants to draw us to him. And he is not unaware. He is not unaware of the journey, and our purpose is to do what? To shut up and move forward. I know that's, you're not supposed to say shut up, I guess, right? Let me shut up to the Bible somewhere. So, it's proper at times. Shut your mouth. Didn't he say that? Keep silent. Well, I fight for you. Okay? So they took up the pursuit and he caused their chariot's wheels to swerve. Some of them said to come off. I don't know if they were sinking in the mud, started getting wet again. And they went, wow, this is not going well. And this is a pretty big stretch of water. There was at least 600 chariots. More than that, because it's all, and all the horsemen and all the army. Okay? A lot of people. This was holding 1,000 plus warriors in here, in the underwater, because it says none of them made it. Okay? Because to swerve, let us flee from Israel, he says. So they said, let us flee from Israel, for the Lord is fighting for them against the Egyptians. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea, so that the waters may come back over the Egyptians, over their chariots and over their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal state at daybreak, while the Egyptians were fleeing right into it. Then the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea, and the waters returned and covered the chariots and horsemen, even Pharaoh's entire army that had gone into the sea after them. Not even one of them remained. Must not have been too shallow. But the sons of Israel walked on dry land through the midst of the sea, and the waters were like a wall to them on their right and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. This is a God of great mercy. Again, they were up against death. They were facing death, man. They had their backs literally to the wall against the ocean to die in, or this enemy pouring down on them. And he said, be quiet and go forward. And he said, thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Floating bodies that were of the thousands of men coming up. When Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. That word believe is a very strong word. It means that they were determined by. That this is something that isn't just an intellectual belief system. This is something that causes you to be determined by it. This is something that you're moved by. They feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and his servant Moses. What was God's purpose? That, right? To bring them to that point so that they would fear him. So that when it came down, had they reached the promised land yet? Was it all good? No. They were still going to go clear down around the bottom of Sinai, as best we can tell, around the peninsula, all the way down the bottom. That's where Mount Sinai seems to be at the bottom there. He's going to take them on this long journey through this desert where there was no food and no water. Fair amount of bad guys. Okay? And he's going to take them down there. Why? To teach them who he was. To teach them to fear him. Because that's imperative in our lives. We cannot have a politically correct view of God. I understand. Every one of us says, why God? And I'm not sure that that's not an acceptable answer on some level with your little kid at times, right? Why, Dad? What's the ultimate answer? Because I told you so, right? Sometimes that's it. Sometimes there's an explanation. Because I told you so. And then, what is the expectation? Shut your mouth and go forward, right? But I don't want to! But that's not fair. But I don't like it. How often do we do that? What if our kids did that? I would hope it wouldn't go well. Right? I would hope that wouldn't be, sit there and debate and argue with them and they're going, same thing with God. I think it's okay as little kids, we go, the smart thing would be, you said it, I'm going. Right? Someday we'll get there, we hope, right? Someday we'll trust God on that level, right? Where God says, this is what I want you to do. You go, ooh, I don't want to. But okay, I'm in. I'm going. Not, why God? Why me? How come? Because I told you so. Okay, I think God finds that, and that's what they had to do. They had to step out in faith. They had to be willing to close their mouth, quit whining, quit complaining, and to be obedient. And all of us struggle with that. Right? All of us. So, it should be our response when we're back against the wall, when it doesn't seem right, when it doesn't seem good. That's a sweet thing. It's really good to have you here, actually. And Dominic, too. It's good. They didn't think he was getting cute yet. I thought he was pretty cute. Oh, my grandkids are way uglier than that. You know? So, pretty cute. So sweet sound. Hear that little baby. So, answer to God. Prayer for years. That's less now. So, thank you, Jesus. So, I want us to consider, Kebab, God is willing to watch. You know, you say, how can God do that, right? I mean, isn't that the answer? How could God let them die? Why would God allow that to happen? Why would God allow that abuse, right? I mean, that's an understandable question. Because he wants to draw you to him. Because he wants, whatever it takes in our lives, is willing to do to draw us to him. Because he cares about us that much, because he loves us that much. And that is his purpose, to redeem us to him. So, here they are, standing on the edge of the sea, looking at a bunch of floating dead bodies. Probably horses too, it doesn't say that, but the humans were there. All over the shore. Time to leave sin. Right? In this deal. Let's pray. God, I thank you that you are not a God that is determined by what I think is right and wrong. By what seems correct to me. By what seems like what I would do. You are a God who is determined by absolute justice, absolute love, absolute mercy, absolute kindness, absolute long-suffering, absolute patience. And I thank you that you are not subjective we are and how we are determined by my feelings. You are determined by what is just, what is right, what is true. What is pure? What is lovely? Doesn't seem too lovely to have dead people and dead horses floating around in the river on the seashore. But that's the God you are. And you're not different. You're the same God today, yesterday, and forever. And you care that much. And your judgment is true. And your judgment will be swift. And your judgment will be absolute against those who are not. Do not shut their mouth and you move forward. Your judgment. It's by faith these people walked. And it's by faith. It's by grace, your mercy, that we are saved through faith. Not of ourselves. It's a gift from you. You gave the people of Israel a great gift in bringing them out of slavery. Even though they said, why? We would rather be slaves than live fearful like this, then go through this struggle, then have to deal with things. But you kept calling them. You said, just be quiet. Just go. Be obedient. Because I love you, and I want to draw you into an intimate relationship with me. I thank you to that God. I thank you to that God that opened the part of the sea. I thank you you're that God that called the nation Israel out of Egypt. I think you're the God that calls us out of the world. Because it's the same. The journey looks rough and arduous. And the enemy, when the enemy sees, just like the Egyptian sees, wait a minute. They are not going to serve us anymore. They are moving away from being our minions, from being those who serve us in our taskmaster, the devil. They will come after us. They will come after us. What do we, how do we respond?
They will come after us harder than ever because we have been used probably for generations to destroy and take people away from a true knowledge of you. God causes us to realize how do we fight spiritual warfare? It's really not, it's not a power struggle at this point. He said it's a true struggle. Be quiet. Be silent and watch me deliver you. Be obedient and move forward. And that's it. It's all about trusting you, God. It's all about stepping out. They didn't have a lot of faith in you. Neither do we. That's why you say if we have the faith of a mustard seed, that's a phenomenal statement. We could say to a mountain to move, and it would move and go into the ocean. So, God, I ask that you would cause us to be people of faith, to be people that are motivated and compelled by your mercy. You are merciful towards us. We are sitting, all of us are sitting here by your mercy. You've called us. You called us. And you continue to call us. And you continue to beckon us. And you continue to draw us to yourself, not as your mercy, not our goodness, not our worthiness. Let me thank you for that. God, I ask that you would cause this year to be a year of intimacy, a year of growth, a year of bonding together in a way that would honor you. I ask that you would protect this body. Cause us to realize the sacred ground and the privilege you've given us of living in intimacy with each other. Cause us to see that as a blessing, even though it doesn't seem fun at times or seems like a real pain. Ask God that you would protect this body in sickness. You've let us, we've gone through a lot of just relentless sickness this last year, and I don't think you want us to be divided by such a thing. So God, give us wisdom to know what that looks like. That we would be a people that are set apart for you. That the world would see and would honor you because of your deliverance in our lives, in our body. Not our goodness, not our religiousness, but our deliverance. Thank you, Jesus, for not hardening our hearts, but instead for softening them and being gentle and kind and drawing us to you. Thank you, Jesus, for giving us the opportunity to even stand and speak of Yahweh, of the true and living God. Thank you for giving us the privilege of living in this country where we can speak freely, study freely, have your word in front of us openly. God, cause us to use that, stand on the gas, not get lazy. Amen.